Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. I hope my Abracadamans had a good week. I had a fantastic week. I had a great weekend, though. Just coming off a great time in Greenville, South Carolina. I was headlining the Comedy Zone out there, and I gotta say, the people in Greenville, South Carolina were fantastic. You guys were great, so if you're listening, thank you so much for coming out and seeing my shows this weekend. I'm also in Greenville. If you ever get a chance to go there, they have an amazing downtown and a park located downtown that is just absolutely beautiful. It is called the Falls Park, I believe, and it's got waterfalls and everything. And, I mean, there's hiking trails, all kinds of things to see right in the middle of downtown there. And it's pretty good size. A lot of people out picnicking. I think that's what it's called, is picnicking, people who go picnicking. Anyways, great place to have a picnic. Highly recommend it. If you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, check it out. It was beautiful. And thank you guys in Greenville for coming out to see my show. I'm also excited. I've got a show coming up tonight. I do. And in Kingsport, Tennessee, I'm going to be at the Gypsy Cider Circus. I love getting that Gypsy. It's a so many times I've had so many great shows there. The people in Kingsport are amazing. So I hope to see you guys tonight. I'm really looking forward to that. And then tomorrow night, I'm going to be at the Barrel House in Knoxville, Tennessee, right here down the road from my house. So I expect to see a lot of familiar faces out there as well. Really looking forward to those shows. I forgot to mention this. As soon as I got back home, I set a personal best record. Yes. For the most consecutive sneezes within a minute. Yeah, the pollen is bad here, folks. So if you're suffering from allergies right now, my heart goes out to you. I am too. Woo, it is bad. Anyways, let's get into some of our sponsors here for the Abracadam Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Rosie Tattoos. Custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. Guys, I was just at Rosie's the other week. Got some ink work done. Her staff is amazing. Rosie is amazing. Also, met a new friend out there, Demo, my man. He does piercings, so if you ever want to get any piercings done, I highly recommend checking him out there, too, at Rosie's. Rosie gets free consultations online through Facebook Messenger or Instagram, or you can email Rosie at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. Be sure to check Rosie out at 570 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee, or give her a call at 865-281-3451. You know you want some ink work done. You know you want some tatties. So be sure to check out Rosie Tattoos. I tell you what, one of my biggest fears, also, you know, traveling on the road, is if your car breaks down. And, you know, I'm no mechanic. I don't know anything about cars. I'm mechanically dumb. But if that happens, don't panic. All you got to do is just give Will Roberts at Will's Towing a call. That's right, Will's Towing, located at 2081 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give Will a call at 865-272-5300. Will come pick up your vehicle and park it anywhere you need him to park it. If you want your car parked in your living room, Will can put it there. So if your car ever breaks down, you need a towing service, be sure to check out Will's Towing. Okay, Abracadamits. Today's guest is, oh man, this guy is super talented. Absolutely super talented. He's funny. He's a magician. He's a creative director, and you can totally see it. I highly recommend you, after this episode, go check out some of his stuff on YouTube. He has performed at Esther's Follies, located in Austin, Texas, for, I believe it was 28 years, a long time. And it's just a fun conversation, and probably one of the craziest hell gig stories I've ever heard on this episode. So if you would, Abracadamits, sit back, relax, and enjoy my fun conversation with the headliner magician at Esther's Follies, Ray Anderson.
All right, we got Ray Anderson here from Esther's Follies. How you doing, Ray?
Hi, good, good. How are you today?
Doing good, doing good. Thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast.
I'm looking forward to it.
Now, I tell you what, you know, I know who you are. Magicians know who you are. And I'm sure a big chunk of Texas knows who you are. But for the rest of the listeners, do you mind to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I'm Ray Anderson. I am the headliner at Esther's Follies, which is a long-running show in Austin, Texas, down on 6th Street, which is sort of like a Bourbon Street, but a little cleaner. Not much, but a little bit.
Now, Esther's Follies, it's a variety show, correct?
It is. It's comedy, magic, music. So we do sketch comedy. We do political humor. And we also do a lot of musical parody. So we do songs about current topics and events. And some of them whole musicals. And then interspersed throughout the show is the magic, which there's about 7 segments of magic. But each segment normally only of the rest of the show lasts maybe 3 or 4 minutes. So if you don't like something, something else comes along right away. It's very, very fast paced. That's how we've always done it.
Now, you know, it's been years ago, but I was lucky to get the opportunity to perform on a variety show. And, you know, it was burlesque, comedy, music. And, you know, I was the magician and you know, a lot of great memories and great times on that show. I mean, and every show was packed because the public loves that type of entertainment. Right. Unfortunately, the venue winded up having issues. But this show has been going on for quite a while, correct?
Yeah, we're actually, there's an asterisk for last year, of course, but we're going 45 years. We're in our 44th.
Wow.
Season, which now is, we are the longest running musical comedy review in the history of the United States. Beach Blanket Babylon in San Francisco held that title, but they closed right before the pandemic, New Year's that year. So we'll be going into a banner year for us this year.
That is awesome. That just makes the return even more sweeter.
Yeah, it really does. And we haven't really announced yet, but we'll be opening again in June.
Yes, yeah. That's awesome. Now, I got to get down to Austin, man. I've heard nothing but amazing things about this show. I went on YouTube and I watched, I think it was something that they did. It was last year, a couple years ago. And everything I saw, I was just like, this looks awesome. Also, the other thing, and I think this is unique with you guys as far as I know, but the outdoor public kind of gets a show of their own, correct? Or some of the show goes on outdoors as well.
Right. In fact, I would say that our theater is one of the performers in the show. That's the only way to put it. Some people break down the third wall. We break down all the walls. What we have is we have picture windows, which are the backdrop of the stage. We can close them when we need to. We have a full fly loft, so we can bring curtains in. But for most of the show, the audience is looking at the performer, and behind the performer are these giant windows, and you see people walking by on the sidewalk as the show goes on. One of my big talents is actually making fun of those people as they stop and watch. That's something I'm very well known for. And then we also have some of our actors that go outside and we'll play a character from outside in some way, especially if it's something that needs to pop in and out. For people that do television, it's so much easier than it is for stage to have something pop on for a quick, like say you need a Bill Clinton to pop up and just do something funny and then get off real fast. If it's just a visual, on television, of course, you just cut to it and you go. But on stage, they gotta walk all the way out there. I got to walk all the way back. So it takes time and it's not as immediate sometimes as you would like for comedy. With us, you can pop into the window outside and do a visual bit as Bill Clinton and then pop right back out in a second. And so it's really the best of all worlds. And in fact, some of the things we even do whole numbers out there.
I think it's, I mean, I've done venues to where the stage was kind of set up that way. And there's times I've thought, gosh, this is kind of awkward. And then I've wound up doing what you do. Something comes by and I'm like, well, you have to address it. You know what I mean? So right. I've actually got laughs out of people walking by. but the thing that what you guys have done though, you've already utilized this and was this something that you guys have always done? Have they always used that back window?
Well, it actually came by accident. The original Esther's Follies show was done in a pool hall. It was just a bunch of people that wanted to get together and do a show, very Judy Garland in that respect. But these guys happened to be old hippies. Anyway, when they first started, the people would sit on the pool tables and watch the show, and they built a little makeshift stage. But the only place that they could build the stage was in front of the storefront windows of this little pool hall. And they put a curtain up in the beginning, you know, to try to make it look theatrical and all. But the guy who owned the curtain got mad at somebody there one day. So he decided he was going to take his curtain and go. And Esther's was really born. After that, it really took off. They started, you know, they realized they were onto something with that window and started utilizing it more and more. And then eventually they moved out the pool tables and started putting in chairs because it became so popular. This was the original venue, which maybe held 75 people and had no air conditioning. So in Texas in the middle of the summer, it was a sweaty mess. And I'm very lucky that I actually started at the original place. So I've been at every place that we've had, but that place burned down 3 months after I started. So.
Well, let's do this, okay? But let's hear about your story, Ray. I mean, sure. You are a magician. You're a comic magician. Every magician's got the origin story. Every magician is familiar with this. But what's your origin story? What got you into magic?
Yeah. Well. My story is very typical of a lot of magician stories in that I got a magic set for Christmas, you know, when I was in the third grade. I actually asked for a doctor's kit, but they were out of doctor's kit. And I think they thought one kit or the other, it's all the same. Boy, did they rue that day for a long time. And so they got me a magic kit instead. And those little plastic pieces in this magic kit are, you know, the beginnings of a long, long career.
So you're like, mom and dad, if you would have got the doctor's kit, things could have, you know, retirement could have been great, you know.
That's right. That's exactly right. And before that, though, I always had a fascination for magic. When I was a young boy, my sister, when we would drive to the swimming pool when we were kids, said that she could change the stoplight. There was one stoplight that was there on the way to the pool, and I was maybe 6 years old, and she would have a little bit of patter or something, and then when she'd snap her fingers, the stoplight would change, and I was mesmerized by that. I couldn't believe it. My sister is magic. And then finally, one day, I figured out that she, of course, was just looking at the other side of the street, so when it got orange, she knew the light was going to change. But the thing is, that fascinated me too, because that was the first time that I ever thought, oh, it's a trick. It's something that you can be in the know about that will help you to create what seems to be a miracle or magic. And so even at an early age, I was fascinated by that idea. So I do owe that to my sister as well. Yeah.
So, okay. So the magic kit and, right. You know,
I grew up in a very, what was then a very small town in Texas. So it's not like there were any magicians around or anything like that. So I got magic books from the local library and then I would steal them because not just because I wanted them, but I was afraid that somebody would read the secrets to my tricks that I was learning. And so I would steal the books. I made up for it, I will say, years later by doing a bunch of benefit shows for them and donating.
Do they know this? Do they know this, Ray? Or are you coming clean right now, bro?
But this might be an exclusive. I don't know that I've really ever told that. But yeah, I started learning magic through books. And then I was, there was a little bit of magic on television when I started. There was a guy named Mark Wilson who had a show called The Magic Circus, which they were four specials that came out, I think, for a year, or maybe less than that. But that was the first time that I realized that you could even do it for a living. I mean, this guy, his props all looked expensive, and he was on television and had a beautiful wife, and he was dressed real nice. And that clicked that, oh, you can make money doing this. I could do this instead of, you know, wanting to be a fireman or anything else. And that pretty much cemented my path to wanting to become a magician. As I got older, I also became involved in theater and then ended up going to UT, studying theater with a minor in dance. I also had a natural aptitude.
Now I have to clarify real quick, Ray, okay? You say UT. Now, I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, so to clarify that up, that's University of Texas, correct?
That is correct, and I tell you what, in deference to you, I will say TU if I should reference it again.
Well, right now, Knoxville, it's more like PU, all right? It's not good times for our program, but...
Well, we're happy for Baylor, and they're just right down the way, so...
There you go. Congratulations to Baylor.
Yeah. But anyway, so those were sort of the beginnings of my esteemed career, and doing theater. I got a small scholarship to go to school at UT for theater, but I knew that I really wanted to do magic. So as I was going for my degree at UT, I was a BFA acting major. I still took classes and tried to apply the things that I was learning to how it could help my magic. I was just one of these lucky people that found the thing that they love to do at a very, very early age. And I always compare it to gymnasts, I think, because you start so young, you know what you want, you're so focused. There was just no way I wasn't going to end up being a magician. There wasn't any other option for me in my head. And even though I might not have even known the exact way to go about doing that, it was still my only goal. Was to be a professional magician. So in the early days,
I think that's something with all of us, because, you know, we all do that at one point. We look back in our life and you think, you know, did I have any clue where I would be? Well, I didn't necessarily have a clue, but I knew it would be something different, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that's in all of us. We've got something different in all of us that we can't do that 9-to-5 regular job that people can do, real jobs that people can do, which I salute, by the way.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, and you can have a passion for a real 9-to-5 job if it's what you love to do, if it's something that you're excited about. I think with kids that are so singularly focused on wanting to be and do something, you know, puberty usually hits and then that all changes. There's something about puberty that makes them forget. And sometimes years and years later, after they've already had a whole other career, they come back, wanting to find that passion again. But especially I hear that with magicians a lot, you know, they're amateur magicians or whatever, but somehow you lose it for a while there. But for me, even that, you know, kept me going. I kept going toward my goal.
Ray, you weren't worried about getting dates. Ray was like, no, puberty. Not going to ruin this for me.
Little did I know, though, you know, that could have helped me to have assistance for a lot cheaper.
That's okay. Well, here's the cool thing is now I don't know. There's this weird debate. I'm a comic. And I mean, I feel like I've been an idiot, a goofball my whole life. But at the same time, I mean, you have people say you can't teach funny. You have people say you can teach funny. I don't really know where I stand on that myself, but were you always kind of a funny guy, funny kid, a sense of humor, something going on there?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, that I had a sense of humor, but I would say that I approach my humor, and especially now, analytically in a lot of ways. I work at being funny. So that's very different than being naturally funny. And as far as your question goes of can you teach it, I think you can get better at it. But, and I've seen people get a lot better at it. But I think if you don't have that natural ability to be just super, super funny, you'll never kind of probably get to where some places where other people are. That's kind of how I've always put it. But I think that you can definitely improve.
I agree.
You should be true to yourself anyway. If you're not a naturally funny person, then the character that you play on stage maybe doesn't need to be just fall down funny. Maybe you need to play to your other strengths, you know, as well. So being funny isn't everything.
No, it's not. And, you know, I think in magic especially, there's a issue with that is you have a lot of magicians who will put comedy and magic, comedy, magician, and this and that. And actually, you know, just because someone may chuckle at your trick doesn't necessarily make that comedy. Sometimes that's just a natural reaction to being amazed, you know? So yes. I believe, you know, if you're not really a funny person, magic doesn't need comedy. You know, it does not need comedy, and comedy definitely doesn't need magic, you know? So I agree with you. I think, you know, use what, you know, be yourself, tap into what you are.
Well, you know, the other thing for me too, I decided very early on that I didn't want to be just one thing. Like if you notice a lot of people, they decide they want to be a comedy magician. That's all they do. And they don't do serious pieces, or a guy who does serious pieces doesn't want to do comedy in his show. One of my biggest influences in my early days was Bette Midler. And because I saw a concert show that she had done called Divine Madness. And what she was doing, I decided was what I wanted to do, you know, for myself. She could be just so poignant in one moment and have people in tears. And then the next moment be completely bawdy and outrageously funny. And then she also played characters within her show, Dolores DeLaga, The Toast of Chicago, which is a send up of and a precursor to her mermaid number that she did for years, where she was doing a send up of a lounge singer. So she was not just one thing in that show. And I took that to heart very, very early on as well. I didn't want to limit myself to just being this, you know, this one type. And luckily when I fell in with Esther's, it was perfect because I don't have to worry about transitions for one thing. There are other things in between the pieces that I do. So every time I come out, I can be fresh. I can be Funny Ray. I can set it up to be a serious piece and a, you know, with serious magic. And then I also have a character that is basically a send up of magic, which is called the Amazing Frank, which is the bawdiest, cheesiest magic act you've ever seen in your life. But it allows me to do, you know, things that I might otherwise not do as my own personality.
Okay. First I want to come back to you said the Magic Frank or Amazing Frank?
Amazing Frank.
Amazing mm-hmm. Frank. But also I want to add this 100% some of the best advice about study. I'm a firm believer in studying other entertainers, and it doesn't necessarily have to be magicians or comedians. You know, somebody who I studied and looked at their stage presence and their ability to own an audience was Freddie Mercury.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, do yourself a favor. If you're wanting to be an entertainer in anything, go study Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, absolutely. He really was entertainment personified. I'll tell you another person, and most people would think that he's probably cheesy now as you think about it, would be Liberace.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you study, I had a record that I think my mother owned that had a live show that was taped of Liberace. That man was absolutely hilarious and had some of the best timing I've ever heard. I mean, really. But, you know, you're right. You don't limit these the thing to magic, but you don't even have to limit it to entertainment. I'm happy to watch anybody do anything that's good at what they do. It could be just about anything. I sat and watched a glass blower for 2 hours one day, just because he was really a true artist at what he did. And I think you can take away a lot from watching somebody that's good at what they do. When it comes to entertainment, you're right. Watching other entertainers, that's the way to go. And most of the people that are my influences are not magicians. I have some, of course, but most of them are entertainers in different fields. So, yeah.
That's awesome, man. I mean, you nailed that on the head. But now, okay, so let me go back to this character, the Amazing Frank. Okay. Now, I saw a video on YouTube. And I tell you what, if you guys listening, you got to go look this video up after we're done with this podcast. I saw this illusion where I believe it's the Amazing Frank sawing a lady in half. Is it the Amazing Frank?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, I don't think they call him amazing because of his magic. I think they would call him amazing because of something else.
Yeah, he has a wandering codpiece that... that's the best way to put it, I think. The thing about Frank is he's this sleazy, womanizing, over-sexual, flirty guy in spandex pants and a zebra skin jacket with a pompadour hair look. He is completely opposite than anything else that I do in the show. And I would never do him early in the show either. He's always the last thing in the show. So they feel like they know me by the time they watch the entire show. And then I hit them over the head with my alter ego, Frank. He's a character that I invented and just was an instant success. He is near and dear to people's hearts and they take him for what he is, which is all just good fun.
Yeah, you definitely, I couldn't see opening with that. That would be a little...
Well, the other thing, too, is they might think that I really am Frank if I opened early with it. He has to come at the end. They have to really feel like they know me before Frank comes along. You know, the other thing about Frank was I wanted to do some illusions. You know, there's so many... we do large-scale illusions in a small space. I think that is pretty unique as well for us. But... I never really liked the idea of just sawing a girl in half for no reason or sticking her in a box and sticking a bunch of swords in. I mean, what is your motivation for that, really? I mean, I just could never understand, why you would do that. So for my own character, when I'm playing basically myself or a heightened version thereof, I just always kind of shied away from those tricks because it really didn't make sense to me. But with Frank, I can do them all. And because of course he would do that. He is very misogynistic. And there's obviously something going on between him and his assistant, and yet he's flirting with a girl on the front row. And then it kind of builds, but if you notice in the video, Frank always gets it in the end somehow. Like the girl always somehow gets him in the end. You know, he never wins. So he gave me the ability to do those tricks and have a reason for doing them. And it kind of just opened up a whole nother genre of illusions for me to do.
Well, it's definitely hilarious. I laughed my butt off watching.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Now, so Austin's a cool town, man. I've never been to Austin, but I've heard nothing but just great things about that town. Now it's growing, correct? There's a lot of people moving there.
Oh, it's unreal how fast it's growing. And I read an article the other day that I think our real estate alone is like the fastest growing in the country now. And, you know, people are just paying huge prices, for real estate out around here. The Austin, I always say the state bird is a building crane because that's all you see downtown. it's growing super fast. We are becoming a tech mecca here. And it's funny, when I first started, it was more of a college town. But it has just completely grown up and out of that to where the UT is really, or TU is really just a sort of an aside or an extra about Austin. And then you have the Capitol, here as well. But there's so many other things going on. And it also has a very live and let live community. And it seems that even though it's growing so fast, those are the types of people that want to come and live here. So it hasn't changed in that respect. Keep now, Austin weird.
Yeah, well, keep Austin weird. Because Austin, all right, probably the town closest to Knoxville that would probably be a little similar to Austin, where I'm at, is Asheville, North Carolina. I don't know if you've ever been.
Oh, I don't think I have, no.
Well, it's another one. It's, you know, a hippie town. Performing arts are just great there. Mm-hmm. And, if you could be downtown Asheville and see two men holding hands and not even look twice or think twice about it. Uh-huh. And, you know, somewhere in the south, southeast, you know, how, you know, you may get whispers or something like that in certain towns. Austin seems to be completely different than any other place, maybe kind of in Texas. Is that correct saying that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, most cities in Texas, the big cities, Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, I mean, they're all, you know, pretty liberal towns. And but there's something about Austin that it's more, for one thing, it's more laid back. You wouldn't think that maybe, but it is. And when I say live and let live, you're free to do pretty much whatever you want here in Austin, as long as it's not hurting anybody else. That's pretty much the philosophy here. And I don't know if that grows out of the fact that we were a big college town and, you know, the hippie movement was so big, even in Austin, you know, in the late 60s or what. But I think even before that, Austin just had always been known as a live and let live kind of city. I couldn't tell you why, it just always kind of has been. And there's a lot of neat things to do here. Yeah.
It also seems like those kind of towns support artists and performing artists a little more.
Well, yeah, and we have a huge live music community here. You can see live music any night of the week here in Austin, and it has its own flavor as well. So we have that going, is you know, and widely supported. People really come out to see the bands and have their favorites, and there's just a whole thing going on there too. Esther's, we've just been very lucky in some ways. Like, we've never even advertised in all the years, you know, that we've been here. We've never really had to advertise. It's always been word of mouth for us. And so, you know, in the beginning, Austin was the one that supported us. Now, of course, we're more of an institution. So, you know, tourists and that kind of thing that come also, I would say the split is 50-50 on that. But you know, Austin has always supported us in that way. And I think they support the music community that way. They perform any type of performing art, you know, very fortunate here. Yeah,
that's great to be in a town, you know, like that. It especially supports the artists. The now, pretty much at Esther's, you guys, you know, pack it out pretty much on a regular basis, correct?
Yeah, we sell out almost every show, and we seat 280, which seems to be, you know, the right size. But they're really packed in there. It's theater style seating, you know, just chairs, and. And, you know, we really fill that place up within limits. Of course, we do have our fire marshal that comes to check on us every once in a while. But so we make sure we do it right. But we pack them in there. But, you know, that's the other thing, too. I think packing people in like that and everybody laughing, it somehow helps the show, too. And we've always had this feeling of you're going to, and I know I felt this way the first time I even went to Esther's. You feel like you're sort of going to a happening. You feel like you're at the end place to be, and we still have that feeling. And so, therefore, people tell their friends about it or want to bring their friends back to experience, hey, let me show you what I found. And, you know, and then they bring their friends back the next time, and that's how we get our follies faithful. But even the first time I ever went and saw the show, it had definitely had that feeling that you were at the end place to be, and it was a secret maybe almost, you know.
And, you know, that energy, I know what you're talking about, that feeling, you know, where people packed in there and the show's going on, there's that magic aura around the whole room, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, we do so much political humor, and the way that the political situation is now with, you know, so many people on, you know, far points of either side, for some reason, when they come together at our show, they're willing to relax all of that, and they're willing to laugh at themselves. And believe me, we're happy to make fun of both sides. We definitely have a liberal slant. There's no doubt to that. We are Austin after all. But we're more than happy to go after anybody who makes a fool of themselves in the political arena. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi is one of our favorite people in the world to make fun of. So we somehow are able to get all of these people with opposing views into one room and laugh together. That you can't say that about a lot of places anymore these days.
You can't. That's something, if you can do that, okay. Now, I don't do a lot of political stuff in my show or, you know, my comedy, but if you, if you're able, to me, I think one of the problems about doing political humor for most people, this is where they screw up, even if they think they're killing it. Hell, they may be making a great career, but what you're doing is you're isolating yourself to one particular audience the rest of your career.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. The other thing, too, is when you're doing humor about politics, all you have to really do is find the common sense approach. It's like if somebody is doing something and the common sense approach is not that, go for that every time. Most people can identify with the common sense approach to a problem. And the funny is when people veer away from that. So that's our sweet spot. I would say maybe not quite a third of the show is political humor, but like I say, about a third of the show is magic. But, and then it's current events and stuff like that too. But we definitely do political humor. There's, you know, no doubt. About that.
And, you know, I think, you know, by focusing on the common sense, I think that's a smart way to approach it. I don't hesitate, or I'm never afraid to, you know, I identify as an independent, maybe a left moderate kind of person, you know. But I do tell people, I'm like, if you're a rational thinking person in 2021, it's a tough life. So it's, and you know, so much material was out there on Trump, and yeah, sure. It was just super. It was almost hack. It was so easy, you know.
Well, that's true. But you know, we did a lot of Trump. We had a whole Trump musical. It was called The Lion King, and he starts out holding his hair up like the little lion in the beginning with the and puts his hair on, goes to work. But the thing about when the Trump time was that the news came so fast, it was actually hard to write for, because every day the news was just changing so quickly. It was something we had to learn to keep up with. So I wouldn't say that it was necessarily, you know, a bonanza for us, because a sketch that might last us, you know, quite a while sometimes might be gone in a week because the news has moved on, you know. It was just that way.
Now, you know, now granted, I think there will be plenty of Biden material too.
Every time absolutely. Yeah. Every time Biden, no matter what president. Yeah.
Every time Biden speaks, I'm just, what? You know, what's going to happen? Now, you know, this is something interesting. You brought this up because, you know, sketch comedy. I do sketch comedy, too. I work with a group called the Knox by Night group, mm-hmm. sketch comedy group. And I'll never forget, though, probably one of the coolest sketch shows that I was part of. I was working with Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And, you know, Kevin's super cool, super awesome. And he's like a sketch god, you know.
Oh yeah.
So, but I was used to doing, you know, stand up and magic, and I'm a one man show. This is my jokes, my world here. So I'm on stage, and I had written this whole bit, and I was excited about it. But it was time for the show, and we've rehearsed it and went over. But it's time for the show, and we're doing the show, and I remember the person across from me doing their lines, the things that I wrote, and they said a little different than the way I had it planned in my head. And actually, they probably made it better. But it's something that you I didn't know how selfish I was until a sketch comedy, you know? That's something new, isn't it?
Well, do you get jealous when they get a laugh off of one of the lines that you wrote? that was a tough one for me. But it's different for me now because, and we don't usually advertise the fact, but I'm the creative director for the show. So I direct and spend most of my time actually on the rest of the show, not on the magic. We put up one or two new pieces of magic a year and we get that just right. But really most of my time is spent with the rest of the show. I think once you know, I can take pride in the fact that this group effort has come up and it works and all of that. So I can I can get my kicks that way. But and these days too, even, you know, in a reading or something, or you throw out a line and then somebody else decides that they're the ones that came up with that, I can even let that go now. It doesn't matter as long as the end product is what I want. Now, I wasn't always that way, but definitely now, you know, it's as a, you know, the whole. It's the whole. If that guy wants to think that's his thing and he gets some satisfaction out of it, I'm happy for that to happen.
That has to be some type of maturity level you have to reach as a performer. Kudos to you.
It's the difference between being a performer and a director. I can tell you that's exactly what it is. And so it didn't take me very long to figure that out either once I started directing parts of the show. So I was eager to let it go, as a matter of fact, because I wanted the things that I was directing to work, to prove myself as a director. So that's how I learned, it's like to let that stuff go.
That's interesting and great advice. That's awesome. Well, let me ask you this, because this brings an interesting question up. We talked about teaching comedy or teaching funny. Do you think chemistry can be taught?
What you say, like chemistry between you and the audience?
No.
Are you talking about chemistry between two people on stage?
Two people on stage doing a sketch, something just clicks, you know?
I think if you're doing sketch comedy and you're playing certain characters, you have more of an opportunity for that to happen with maybe two people that in normal life might not click at all. But if they're playing characters on stage, I think, you know, you could teach that by honing in on a character and then building that one up to what you think is going to play off of the other one, you know, better. I would suppose that happens. But as far as the chemistry as a group or as a whole, you can work on that, but you know, every once in a while you're going to get a bad apple. There's nothing, you know, they usually don't last very long. So we've all been together so long, so many of us, some of our people have been there for, you know, 25 years.
Wow.
And then some that come and go and stay a year or two, or we lose them to the Groundlings in LA or one of those groups. And we've even had a couple that have gone on to do Saturday Night Live. So in the early days, people stayed around a really long time, but then now it's like, it almost seems like we're sort of a stepping stone for other groups that might get you seen if they're interested in doing television. So
that's now, okay. Well, let me ask you this. Let's get to this. I got to ask this question. Here on the Africa Dam podcast, Ray, we have to ask this question. We ask every entertainer this question.
All right.
Okay. Let's hear a hell gig story. A show or something you were doing where something just was crazy, something went wrong. Let's hear it.
All right. Well, I, of course, have many of those, but I'll tell you an actual Esther's story, since I've already told you about the windows and all of that and how it happens. So I've told you that, you know, we do some things outside the window. And we have some of our own people out there who take care of the props and are people that maybe, you know, aren't necessarily performers per se. They're just people that we've hired. Some of them maybe even live on the street perhaps, and they come and we utilize them. Well, there's this one guy who sells roses. He also sold roses. So that was his other thing, where he had a little stand on the side where he sold these roses to people as they walked by. And he also helped us. His name is Crazy Carl. And he was.
There's actually a Crazy Carl.
Oh yes, Crazy Carl. Let me tell you, he is crazy, and he is somebody that everybody in Austin knows. He's run for mayor every year for the last 25 years, I think, too. And there's even a documentary on him called Crazy Carl and His Man Boobs. So if you ever wanted to really
okay, hold on, Ray, hold on. You're giving too much on me here, brother. Hold on. Crazy Carl has ran for mayor, and now Crazy Carl has a documentary called Crazy Carl and His Man Boobs.
And I believe that it's on YouTube. So if you want to go look it up, go for it. All right. So that's the setup.
Can we get him on the podcast? Is there any chance?
Well, unfortunately, poor Carl is in ill health these days.
Oh, okay.
I would say that absolutely. And believe me, he would be a great guest. Well, anyway, Crazy Carl really lived up to his name one night because these guys had driven by and they had to stop at the light, which is where our window is and Carl's corner is, where he's selling his roses. And somehow they had gotten into an altercation, yelling back and forth at one another. And then the guys went around the block and they came back around again. And Carl saw them while they were stopped at the light on the other side and decided he was going to get them. So he had a can of spray paint for some reason. And so when the guy stopped to give him grief again, and I want to say they were in a lowrider car too, it was all lit up. Carl reaches in with this spray can paint and sprays this can all inside the car while these guys are giving him grief. And so they jump out of the car and they start to chase Carl. And where does Carl go? Carl jumps to the side of the theater, jumps inside the door where I'm performing on stage, and 280 people are watching me, and Carl goes running by as this other guy comes chasing him holding a knife right in the middle of my act. And the guy gets about 3 or 4 feet on stage before he realizes he has 280 people watching him. Carl is ducked out the other side backstage, never to be seen again for the night. And this guy looks around and like doesn't know where to go because he also can't figure out where the exit is. So he finally like turns around and goes about the way that he came in, and the car goes speeding off. And the saddest part of all was I think half the audience thought it was just part of the show.
Oh my God.
Because we do so many weird things. It was like they just thought it was all, you know, the thing that was happening as part of the show.
Imagine that guy's story when he got back to wherever he was going. Dude, that's almost like a Naked Gun movie. Didn't that happen in one where they ran out on stage, Leslie Nielsen? That's insane.
I can't. And the other thing, too, is, see, I'm always keeping one eye on the window because I'm looking to see who's coming by. You know, so if it's somebody funny that I can kind of make fun of, you know, I've got my line. So I was actually watching the confrontation with the car and Crazy Carl and the spray paint out of the corner of my eye. I could see. Now, the audience couldn't see it because it was off to the side, but I could see it. So I saw it going on, so I wasn't totally surprised when Carl came bounding in, but I was flabbergasted when the guy with the knife came.
Holy crap. That may be one of the best stories ever on Abracadam right there.
Yeah, it is absolutely true. And there's actually an Esther's book, and that story is in there. So
that is crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh. Okay. Let's do this. Let's ask a tough question. We're going to ask a tough question here. You're not a conspiracy theory guy, are you? You're not a flat earther, are you, Ray?
No, not this month.
The only thing flat is Texas, but all right, but okay.
I live in the hill country, so.
There's hills where you're at?
Just right outside of town. We've got it all.
Oh, good. Man, I got to get to Austin, dude. I got to get there. Okay, let's do this. Okay, here's one. If there was a conspiracy theory about Ray Anderson, what would it be? And it would have to be fake, or maybe with a little bit of truth in it.
I think the conspiracy theory about me would be that I'm actually straight and that I've been playing gay all this time so that I can just do all kinds of lines and call women bitches on stage and not get in trouble. Because gays always get a pass.
I love that.
That would be it. The conspiracy theory is that I'm actually straight and I've just been playing gay all these years.
You know that Ray Anderson's straight. He really, I'm telling you, I've got proof.
Surprisingly enough, a lot of people do think that. I don't know why, but they do.
That is awesome. Well, Ray, I got great gaydar. My son's gay, so.
Oh, there you go.
I can spot a gay guy. Right here. Bam. There he is. I think once again, that's a great conspiracy theory right there. Perfect.
So don't tell my wife that I told.
We'll keep that in the queue or the queue on or whatever. That crap.
There you go.
There we go. Well, I tell you what, let's do this. Before we get out of here, I'm going to bring this back to something that we were kind of talking about earlier, about how, like, you kind of always knew you wanted to be a magician, you wanted to do these things. I know there's people out there who maybe want to follow their dreams or do, you know, that one thing that they had a love for, an interest for when they were a child, and now they're adult and they feel like they can't do those things. Any advice for anyone thinking about making that step?
Well, I would say that you give yourself permission to fail at something in the first place. Maybe what it is that you're wanting to do, maybe you won't make it, but you should at least try. And the thing about it is, if you don't try, you'll never know. And you have to give yourself permission so that if you should fail, it's no big deal because you already gave yourself permission to fail, but you're also giving yourself permission to succeed. So that would probably be my advice. Give yourself permission, cut yourself a break. I see people are so hard on themselves all the time in this world. And cut yourself some slack and do what you want to do. And you know, make your life what you want to make it.
I totally agree 100%. I tell people right off the bat, you know, people don't, they have no clue how many times I've been told no. I've been told no a lot. So I think that's great advice. Give yourself permission to fail and just keep getting back up and, you know, you'll be fine. And, you know, something else is I think a term that is used a lot, especially in show business, is, when I make it in show business, well, you know, if I feel like I've already made it, you know, I get paid to tell jokes and show magic tricks.
Right.
I mean, come on. You know, I mean,
well, that was my original goal. I mean, I didn't know any better than to just say, I want to do magic for a living. That was my original goal. Now, you know, after I succeeded at that, I went on and set another goal, but that was my original goal. And when I succeeded at that, I was happy. And I've been happy ever since. I tell people all the time, I'm the happiest person I know. I really am. And it's all because I'm doing what I love to do. And, that I'm so happy. If I wasn't, I know I wouldn't be. So.
That's awesome, Ray. Now, Ray, before we get out of here, where can listeners find Esther's Follies on the internet, Facebook? How can they find you?
Sure. It's real easy. Just look up estersfollies.com and that'll take you to our website. Like I say, we've been down for a year, but we're going to start back up in June, and the website will give you an idea of where we're located and what ticket prices might be. We had a Patreon page that was running during the time that the pandemic was happening. So we continued to produce videos, and there was quite a learning curve there. Producing comedy for online. And we're still doing that right now until we get back to live shows. So if you're interested in that, you might want to check out the Patreon page. I think it's something like $5 a month, and it's got tons of material and sketches and all kinds of interesting things on it. So that might give you a flavor of kind of what we do in the show. But come see us down on 6th Street. We have a great time, and you'll go away laughing. I promise.
I have to get down there and see you. Ray, once again, thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam podcast.
Oh, my pleasure, Danny. My pleasure. Glad you asked me.
All right. That does it for that episode of the Abracadam podcast. guys, I really hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ray. He is such a funny guy. Also, if you're ever in Austin, Texas, you have to go check out their show, Esther's Follies. I can't even believe they don't even have to advertise. And yes, it does pack out. So eventually, when we do get back to the norm, you'll want to check that show out because it will sell out fast. So if you're ever in Austin, Texas, be sure to check out the Esther's Follies show and definitely check out Ray Anderson. Guys, if you haven't done so yet, be sure to follow the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts and give our Facebook page, the Abracadam Facebook page, a like. Also, hey, I'm on Instagram and TikTok. So if you guys are on there, give me a follow. I'm going to start getting a little more active on TikTok. So stay tuned for that one. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
Abracadamits.